following is a paid program, and the views expressed on this show do not represent the views of WJZ-FM, Entercom Communications, its sponsors, or affiliates.
This is Living Today, heard every Sunday morning from 7 to 8. Now, here's your host, Sharice Irons.
Hey guys, good morning, and welcome to Living Today. This is your host, Sharice Irons, the CEO and founder of Irons Group LLC. Good morning, Maryland, and everyone else who's listening out there. It's a rainy, rainy morning here in Maryland. Please be careful on the roads. I think I saw about two accidents on my way into the studio this morning. Once again, this is your host, Sharice Irons, CEO and founder of Irons Group LLC, where our job is to inspire, empower, and encourage individuals, organizations, and the youth to discover who they are authentically. We offer a variety of services. To learn more about those services, visit my website at www.ironsgroupllc.com, or you can give me a call at 646-220-5889, or shoot me an email at cirons@ironsgroupllc.com. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at Irons Group, or on Instagram or at Miss Iron Sharpens, and on Facebook at Irons Group LLC. Once again, thank you for those of you who are joining us this morning. Welcome on, and I look forward to just being with you this hour. Just, you know, tighten your seatbelts so we can talk about brotherly love this morning. Last week, we talked about love and relationships and intimacy in our relationships. We had Pastor Edward Lee on here from Longview Bible Church, but this morning, we're going to switch gears a little bit. We're still talking about love, but this morning, we're going to be talking about it from the perspective of loving your brothers. And that could be your physical brother, your blood brother, but in this case, what we want to talk about is your brothers, those people that as young men, you kind of become friends with. As women, we always have a lot of girlfriends or a certain group of friends that we've been friends with. For example, I've had some friends for over 20 plus years now that we've been friends or girls since, you know, middle school and high school. So that's what we're going to be talking about this morning. But from the perspective of talking about our brothers, and joining me this morning will be author, father, community activist, inspirational speaker, name it, he's doing it, you guys, to help the community and young men in our community. So Dr. Lamar Darnell Shields, are you on the phone with us this morning?
Yes, good morning. How are you guys doing?
Good morning, and I'm doing fabulously. Are you good? Are you waking up this early to come on the show?
Oh, yeah, I'm good. You know, the rain sort of slows you down. It sort of forces you just to be, as they say. And so I'm enjoying it, but it definitely slowed me down, slowed my mood down, slowed the kids down, but I'm good. I'd rather take the rain over the snow.
That's what I said. I'll take the rain over the snow any morning. So I'm so glad that you were able to join us this morning. So welcome on Living Today. And
yeah,
I'm just really excited to have you on. And I can't wait to get started so we can just get into it this morning. So you are a very active participant in the community. You do a lot of work with young men. So can you just tell the people a little bit about yourself so that they can know who you are?
Well, I am a native-born Chicagoan from the south side of the Chi. Grew up in Chicago and also in Latin America. Lived in Puerto Rico. Went to school in Louisiana and also in Mexico. Moved to Baltimore to become a teacher. Wanted to go to school to become a lawyer, and that sort of shifted. I've always had this love and passion for serving. That's what I call my work, not working, but serving. So I ended up in Baltimore, moved here, then taught at City College, which is the third oldest high school in the country, then left City to work for Colin Powell's program, America's Promise, then wound up working at 92Q, a radio station, doing a segment called Amazing Youth, where once a week I would highlight the amazing things that young people are doing. In that process, I started an organization called Urban Leadership Institute with a good friend and a brother to me, David Miller. Then I left David to create a new company called the Cambio Group, which means change in Spanish, to then start doing work all over the country, not only just with schools, nonprofits, for-profits, but to really really support anybody that's working with young people, anybody that wants to pursue a greater life, be it spiritual, financial, social life, And so now I get a chance to travel all over the country doing this work, providing service or serving others. A lot of the work that I'm doing is centered around equity. How do we then get, you know, equitable services for children who look like you and I, black and brown children, children from Latin America, children from the Caribbean, children from all over the country. How do we then provide those services for those black and brown kids in the schoolhouse? And I'm enjoying that, working with families, you know, a father of three children. My daughter actually is visiting Spelman as we speak. She's a junior, and so she's looking at Spelman. And because, you know, we pro HBCUs and Shields family, because my wife went to Bowie and I went to Grambling State University. And so, yeah, I am just here. Hopefully I can provide some type of insight on this conversation. As we talk about love, I think one of the people that uses the word a lot that I really appreciate is a man by the name of Dr. King, who on April 4th we're going to celebrate, or we're going to acknowledge the 50th a commemoration of his assassination on a balcony in Memphis, Tennessee. But a man who I got a chance to study a lot, who exudes that because he studied the teachings of Jesus Christ and also studied the teachings of Mahatma Gandhi. And so when you talk about this word love, which is a verb, which is action, Dr. King, someone who I look up to or continuously look up to, uses this word quite a bit in every speech that you can think of. And, you know, speaking of that word love, you know, the great Dalai Lama said, love is the absence of judgment. And so in my work, in my work around equity, my attempt is to get people to stop judging. You know, Sharice, that's one of the hardest things that gets people to do. You know, that I try to get people to do is to try to be non-judgmental. And when you think about what the Dalai Lama said, love is the absence of judgment. And it really is. I mean, it really, really is. But it's so hard to do, just like it's hard to love people. You know, you're a former teacher. You say you like your kids, but man, sometimes I just don't love the things that they do. I don't love the things. So that's a strong, strong word. So I'm glad to be talking about that.
Well, fantastic. I guess I don't need to ask you what that means, because we pretty much have the same definition of what love is. And to me, love is an action, and it's unselfish behavior, and it allows you to focus on other people. And I always say that love, the perfect example of love was, you know, Jesus ultimately making that sacrifice for us and giving himself. That is the ultimate sacrifice that anyone could make for you, is to lay down their lives for you. And so when you said that, you know, that love is an action, I was laughing, because literally that's what I said last week. I've been saying that for me, that is how you show love. And being able to say you separate someone's behavior from the actual person is something that's really important when you're talking, because we throw love, that word, around. You know, I love my favorite team. I love, you know, my cat. I, you know, that's a word that we just kind of randomly use. But in our cases, for me, in our experiences working with children, you have to be able to love other people besides just your family. And that is the greatest way and a great test of whether or not you really truly say that you love someone. So I know that you've had a lot, you do a lot of work in the community, and you know, you work with young men, but that wasn't how you started your life. So for you, when you think about brotherly love, what does that mean to you? Like, what do you think of when you think of brotherly love?
I mean, again, I think one of the greatest examples, and you don't have to be a Christian to sort of believe this concept, but if you understand the historical context of this man, you know, we call Jesus the Christ. You know, Christ was a title. There were several Christs, you know, across the globe, if you understand what that means. I mean, I think he exhumed that, you know, as a young kid growing up in the ghettos in the Middle East. And they say, how can anything great come out of Bethlehem? And I think about, you know, I think about the love that he exuded coming out of the womb and coming into this world. Love is sacrificing yourself, you know, sacrificing the things that you might want to give to another person, i.e. your child, i.e. your student, or, you know, a neighbor, you know, a friend. I think it's giving everything that you have. You know, I think about that love. I think, you know, I go back to, you're a New Yorker, I'm from Chicago. Yeah. I know you're a New Yorker by way of the Caribbean. But KRS-One had that song, Love is Gonna Get You. And I think about that. It came out in the 90s. You know, he said, we talk about this love. You know, what does it really mean? And he goes down a line. Now, that's why I love using culturally relevant stuff. You know, he goes down a line talking about, a guy who was a drug dealer, a girl who was selling her body, a guy who had killed somebody. And the hook was, love's going to get you. But the reality is people thought that they were in love with something, but it was really, really lust. Mm. It was really, really lust because, you know, we don't really love these physical, these material things because those material things eventually go away. You know, anybody on their deathbed, they've done research on people who were dying. Mm-hmm. And they interviewed thousands of people on their deathbed. And everybody that was about to transition or to die, nobody said that they wanted more stuff. They didn't say, oh, man, I wish I'd have gotten a bigger car. I wish I'd have slept with, more women or more men. I wish I'd have smoked a little more marijuana or done more drugs. They all said, I wish that I could have spent more time with other people, be it their mother, their cousin, or what have you. And they talked about love. They talked about being connected. And love is a connector. It brings people together, almost like good music and good food. Going back to your roots, good music and good food, man, in the Caribbean and Jamaica, man, that's all you need.
Exactly.
And so it's a connection. And so when people didn't understand, and I got to go back to Dr. King's. I just came back from Selma like 2 weeks ago and I'm doing some work with his barber, Mr. Nelson. I'm going to come back to that as well. Mr. Nelson, who was Dr. King's barber, who's still living, he's 84 years old, living in Montgomery. He says, man, he met Dr. King when he was taking over Dexter Baptist Church in Montgomery. And he said that he had never seen a man or a person love the way that he did. He said, I remember Dr. King sitting in my barber's chair, getting a haircut, and he would open up his briefcase, and his briefcase would have all of these letters, and people were sending him money and all of this. He said he loved people so much, like he was so into people. And so I attempt to be, my life is attempt to be an example of that, going back to all of these great leaders, be it Buddha, or be it Jesus. You know, they all talk about being still and loving yourself and being in the moment. And I attempt my life every day is to be a living example, of that, of their lifestyle and removing the dogma behind it because people get caught up in it. But just studying, even when you study, Buddha's life, he gave up so much stuff. If you read Siddhartha, he gave up so much stuff. To be connected to people. And you look at Jesus' life, he gave us so much to be connected with people. You look at the Gandhi and King, they gave up so much stuff to be so they were a lover of doing the work and they were passionate. And when you love and you're passionate about something, you'll give up these earthly materials to do something greater than yourself, as they say, for the least of these. And so that is what I'm hoping my life is. But, it's hard because we live in this world where now we get a little change. We grew up in these disparate communities, so we didn't have stuff. So you get a little change here, a little money here. So it does sort of take you off track. But when you talk about that brotherly love or that sisterly love, that bond is sort of hard to break when you see that connection, when you really, really see that connection. And that's what I attempt to do. With all the programs that I started, from the Rites of Passage program that I was a part of, to the Saturday school at Johns Hopkins called the Praise Academy, to the work that I'm doing. If you just saw this video that I posted with a group of boys I'm working in Anne Arundel County, teaching
that
them how to meditate.
Good. Yes, I saw that.
These little boys who, and to get them to sit for 5 minutes, and I tell them, I said, we love each other. I said, you guys, and then of course they squirm and scrimmage when I say, I love you before you leave. Because that's a foreign word to them. Mm-hmm. And some of them, they've heard love so much, but then it came back with abuse. Mm-hmm. They've heard love so much, but it came back with being disrespected. And so a lot of times they don't know what that actually means. And even when you talk about love in abusive relationships, folks who are in these abusive relationships, they hear that word. Then all of a sudden they're being beat. So then they're confused with it. Even when you talk about, we're talking about Black History Month, slave owners used the Bible to hold us, and they used biblical terms, and love was one of them. Slaves, love your masters. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was just at the Harriet Tubman Museum down in Cambridge in Dorchester County and talking about biblically how they use slaves. Think about that. Slaves, love your masters. And when mm-hmm. you're coming from a another country, another Africa is not a country, when you come from another continent, don't understand the language, and you're hearing somebody say, love your mat. First of all, you my master. You beat it in me. And then you're using the Bible against me, and you're using biblical terms. So then historically, when you think about it, we've been confused with this word. Mm-hmm. We've confused abuse with love because it came with security. Mm-hmm. And yeah, love brings security, but love doesn't have strings attached to it. It doesn't have expiration date, Cherise. You don't say, I'm going to love you. Because you got a son. You raised a boy. He drinks some milk. You know, now he probably smell the container. Instead of that smell test, see if he can drink the milk. You look at the expiration date, like, all right, I got another day. I'm going to shake it up a little bit. Love is not like that. Love does not have an expiration date. It doesn't have strings attached to it. And so if we teach that model and if we believe in that model, then I think we can really, really pour into people. But before pouring into people, pouring into ourselves.
Yes, that's very important to pour into ourselves first. So, you know, as I was preparing for this show, I didn't realize that. I mean, there is some information about male friendships and male relationships, but it's very skewed, if you know what I'm saying. So a lot of it, you know, talked about, there are a lot of different articles and a lot of it that said that men tend to struggle with maintaining, you know, long-term relationships or friendships from their childhood, especially after they get married and, you know, they have their own families. So, I mean, what has been your experience with that? Do you think that's a fair statement to make?
I think that's the total opposite. Like, so if you read the great book, shout out to my book, What I Learned in the Midst of Chaos, that you can get on my website at lamargarnellshields.com. If you read What I Learned in the Midst of Chaos, Chaos is a book that I wrote about my group. We were a group of 20-plus African-American, Latino, and boys from the Caribbean who grew up on the south side of Chicago in the crack era. And we all went to college. Now, you notice I didn't say we graduated from college, right?
No.
I said we all went to college because we supported each other. Many of us did not have strong dads in our lives. I was one of them who didn't live with me. So we support each other. I've always been the one who is always, like, I just got a text, Cherise, it's funny, last night my boy Rod, hey, they called me Nail. Hey, Nail, thanks for reaching out to me. Sorry it took so long to hit you back. Brother, I hope all is well. I've always been that connector. I don't know where that research comes from. Men stay in contact. We stay in contact. I stay in contact with my brothers. And that book, I wrote that book to show America that is possible, that is doable, not with a gang, even though you can put a gang and family side by side and write the characteristics and they look very similar. Mm-hmm. We weren't a gang. But we're a group of brown and black boys who grew up on the south side of Chicago, who needed each other, who supported each other. I'm still that way. Most of the guys that I know are still that way. Is that we're still in contact. My buddy Wayne had a stroke recently. And, you know, brothers are dealing with health issues. We're not that old, but brothers are dealing with health issues. And I made one call. All the brothers in chaos started either calling Wayne, texting Wayne, sending some prayers to him to support him in his effort. And so I don't really believe that research. I believe that men are connected. A lot of times sports keeps us connected. Children keeps us connected. Other interests that we might have keep us connected. To the point where, you know, when I think about men, because I look at my wife, and she's not as close as a lot of her friends. And I look at my sisters and other female friends. There's normally like a one or two that you guys stay connected with.
Right.
With us, what I notice, not just me, even with other people that I know, brothers are still connected to their friends. And it's interesting. I remember reading this book and the timing was perfect. I can't remember the year it came out. Maybe I could sort of walk to my desk and pull it off my shelf. This great book is called Brother Man, The Odyssey of Black Men in America. And this whole book, Brother Man, The Odyssey of Black Men in America, this entire book is writings from African-American men throughout the diaspora, which is all over the world. And I remember one of the first poems that I read, Sterling Brown, not Sterling K. Brown, the great actor that women are falling all in love for. There was another guy in history called Sterling Brown. And he wrote this poem called The Strong Men Getting Stronger, Getting Stronger. And I remember that. And he's talking about the relationship that men in particular, this book is focusing on, men of color, that we sort of stay connected. And I am a testament to that, that we do stay together. Our relationships are strong. I think about the great film that Spike Lee did, because I took my student to see the film Get on the Bus, and I remember that friendship and that bond of those men. I'm like, man, how is Spike Lee going to make a movie with some brothers just taking a bus? But that's right. The creative genius of a man named Spike Lee, a Morehouse man named Spike Lee who was able to do it. And you saw those bonds in that. Even when you look at some of the films, you know, we have a strong, I think I think the bond between women is stronger because of the womanly love and how you guys were created and being the creators on this planet. But I think men are strong when they come together as a unit. And so I'm constantly using that word love with any young man I work with, because many of them have never heard it. And so and sometimes it makes them feel uncomfortable, Sharice, but it's a word that I use quite a bit. But I don't throw it out all the time, because I think the more you throw that out, it's one of those words that gets weaker and weaker and weaker. And I don't want it to be that weak. I want it to be strong. It's like how people are using the N word, and they say, "Oh, I put the A on the end, or I put the H on the end. It's not as strong as N-I-G-G-E-R," but you know what it actually means.
Okay.
And so I want to mean, you know, what it was meant to mean. But what's interesting in India, if I'm correct, because my roommate, Shereka was from India. She was saying, and you could check this out, but she was saying in their language, they didn't have a definition of love because it was hard to explain, which I thought was powerful.
Well, we are going to take a quick break, Dr. Shields, and we'll come right back with you. Just give us a few minutes, everybody. We'll be right back.